Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time, Friar Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Alongside Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Chris Ello, and Sam Levitt, here's your host, Annie Heilbrun.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome on into the Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Grab a chair, get comfy, lock in for 1 hour of commercial-free, uninterrupted Padres talk right here on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego's number one sports station. I'm Annie Heilbrun, joined by my illustrious colleagues today, which I'm going to introduce right now. Do you not think you're illustrous?
Not even a little.
Okay.
I think
do.
You're
not even a little.
I think he's illustrious.
Oh, by the way, it's an hour and 10 minute round
it's an hour
I just found
and five
out.
Minutes.
So yeah, hour 10. Like
what?
Five, hour five.
And you agreed to that? Did
hour
they
five.
Not check
hour
in
five.
With your people?
Man.
11:05.
11:05.
Yeah. So, and it's going to be a little tricky those last few minutes there.
I know.
Because
you're
going to want to be jumping out of here.
Yeah. I was just drowning for like the last 20 minutes on my show. So I get it. I'm ready.
All right. One half of Gwynn and Chris is here. Chris Ello, thanks for being here.
Good to be here. And my representatives were alerted that the show would go a little long today, so I'm okay.
It should be a little extra added bonus into your contract.
That's right.
My representatives read Lori Ello. That's my representative.
My Tony, union rep is not very happy about this at all.
Yeah.
Tony Gwynn Jr. in Colorado getting ready for the final game of the four-game set against the Rockies. The other half of Annie and Elston, Craig Elston, wearing his Jurickson Profar tee today.
Yep, Mr. Relevant.
Mr. Relevant.
Yeah.
Very good.
Just got to show the pride. My favorite play.
We are fortunate to be joined by Sam Levitt. First time in studio for the roundtable,
yes.
Sam. Pre and post game show. There's so much more for the
One
station.
Of us. What an honor.
Are you at all nervous for this, or are you like, God, here I go?
No, I'm not nervous. It's a cool setup. I feel a little out of place with the lights and the cameras. This is
showbiz, baby.
Yeah, this is showbiz.
Showbiz, baby.
Can we share Sam's story before the show started?
Oh, about the pizza?
He doesn't want to break his
Passover, yeah, sure.
But they have Roundtable Pizza here.
Well, I haven't broken it yet.
And he hasn't broken it yet, but he told Adam Klug, he goes, I'm probably going to break my Passover and have a piece of pizza, but don't worry, I'll resume after I eat the pizza.
Yes. He'll go back into Passover.
He'll go back into Passover.
It's just a little diversion.
It's
the thought that counts.
You're only human.
Now I haven't had the slice of pizza yet. There are also there's wings and salad there too, so I could maneuver a little bit.
Sam realized that this is commercial free just as the clock was ticking and the show was starting. So if you see him get up and walk over and get a piece of pizza,
I may do that.
Just let him do it.
Okay.
We've got pregame at 11:10.
Yeah, we don't judge.
Talk about the extra 5 minutes. They got me to do this. Pre-game, when pregame's at 11:10 today.
Oh, all right. I mean, you're already ready then, right?
Which I'm not complaining.
And then after the game, Sammy, we're going to have you stay a little late and work on our NFL draft coverage show tonight. Which is also sponsored by Roundtable Pizza.
And Ben Higgins in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
he normally moderates this thing. And I will see why as this hour goes on. Now, I tend to think of him waking up in a hotel suite with a tiger around him.
No,
it's not that kind of trip.
It's not that kind of trip for Benny. He's staying with a buddy of his that bought a house out in Vegas. Benny loves to golf. So they're playing in like a member guest tournament.
Oh, boy.
He was up early. He has gone through the entire course in his head. He's played it in his mind a bunch of times. He's very excited. I'm excited for him. That man works incredibly hard. He's incredibly valuable. Our show was... It's totally different without him there.
You guys did a great job.
But you will be phenomenal at this role.
And great job by your wife stepping in. Okay?
Doing
the Lord's work there.
So fun today.
All right. I love it. Okay. Let's start with looking back at the week that was. All right. Overall thoughts since we last met for the roundtable. The Padres played 3 against the Toronto Blue Jays, lost that series, took 1 game there. They're in the midst of a 4-game set in Colorado. They've won 2 games, so they can either split or win the series. We're going to go deeper into everything today, but just your overarching thoughts on this last week of baseball. Chris Ello.
Well, I think, 3-3 record, and I think it's been an uneven week because they haven't played clean baseball, at least consistently clean. And, Tony's mentioned this a few dozen times, so I'm starting to kind of buy into it. As we go along here, we're realizing this team, although I think has, which has ability to be good, doesn't have room for error. Like maybe last year's team could make a couple of mistakes, still win the ball game with a big fly late in the game. This team here can't afford to give away runs, can't afford to give away base runners. Even though they won the game Sunday over Toronto, you lose a couple of guys on the bases in that game, give the Rockies a couple of extra outs a couple of nights ago, and that cost them a ball game. So it's been uneven, and that's, they need to clean up, and it's important for this team to be successful.
Craig, thoughts?
Well, I'll just build off what Chris said, because you're 100% on spot in terms of the defense and our low error bars, but I think that carries over to the offense as well. This is a club that'll pop for 4 and then go quiet for the rest of the game, or some of these nights, just 2 runs on 5 hits. It's been a mixed bag for San Diego on a lot of levels, and I think we've seen more potential out of this year's lineup in strange ways, just because it's 1 through 9, a little bit deeper. But that potential is only realized, about half the time.
Sammy, you follow this so intricately on the pre- and post-game shows, all the little details. Anything stand out to you?
Well, I think, and I talked about it yesterday pregame, the errors have been really costly. It's not just the errors they're making. It's almost unusual in the way that they've been so costly. But it speaks to what Chris and Craig were talking about. I think on a lot of nights, the margin for error is going to be small. And I don't know that this is going to be an offensive team this year that goes and scores 6-7 runs every night. They're going to have to win on really good starting pitching, which they've got some of, and playing good fundamental baseball. And I'll say that Mike Schilt is somebody who, when he was hired, the thing you kept hearing about Mike Schilt was that he was about the fundamentals. And I'm really interested to see how that plays out over the course of the year, because this is a team that's going to have to play fundamental baseball, play good defense, have good pitching, come through with a runner on third base in less than 2 outs, do the little things right. But overall, to this point, they're sitting at 14-13. They've had a pretty tough schedule so far. That tough schedule continues into late May, into early June. It's tough for a while here to start. Has it all been perfect? No. But I'm with you. I think there are a lot of good early indicators from this team. You sit 14-13, but doing the things you need to do is important, and that includes, today's not a must win against the Rockies, but going and winning a series in Colorado against the Rockies team that hasn't been good. So all that in one, kind of my state of the Padres so far.
Craig and I have termed, we have a term, much win, a much win game.
Oh, much win.
Okay. Are you going to rage today if they lose the game? Do they need? Can they afford?
You need something
early in the season. Will you rage, Woodsy?
He has 4 hours to fill tomorrow.
Yeah, 4 hours to fill. Depends on how they lose. To be honest with you, the errors have been fatal, and the errors cannot be fatal. And everybody on a baseball field needs to be able to make a mistake and know that their teammates can pick them up. You hate the error that you saw, but you also hate that 0-2 pitch that Michael King threw, and sometimes it gets away from you, man, and it doesn't make any sense. And it's easy to look at it and go, you can't throw that pitch. My guess is he probably didn't want to throw it right where he threw it.
Pretty sure.
Pretty sure. Because you'd be crazy to. You'd be crazy to give somebody something that good 0-2. The errors so far this season have been fatal for this team. I do feel like that we said this a lot last year about a lot of things. I do feel like that will regress a little bit,
Sure. And
they'll
positively
yes. in a good way. you expect some of the guys that are making mistakes to not make those mistakes down the road. You know, it's funny, too, when we talk about a manager, and I've said the same thing. Mike Schilt preached, you know, the discipline, the small things. I haven't seen a lot of it yet. Is that something that a manager at the big league level can – what is he going to say? Hassan Kim, you need 25 more grounders today. Jake, you need to make sure that you, you know.
Right. More drills. More drills.
The guys are working. You know that they put in the work. Sometimes it's just about the execution of it. And sometimes it just doesn't go your freaking way. And it drives you crazy. The pitchers need to pick their defenders up. The defenders need to pick their pitching staff up. And the offense needs to pick up everybody when they get a chance to, especially against some of the lesser pitchers in the league. You know, I the worse a guy is, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to have a great day against this offense. It's been a little odd seeing that the last
going
couple of
five
seasons.
Shutout innings against the Rockies bullpen in Denver is not easy to
it's
do.
Not easy to do.
And no, they did no home runs.
Yeah,
no Padres.
Yeah,
yet.
No bombs yet.
Weird, first time since 2013. They've gone 3 games in a row in Colorado without hitting a home run.
I don't care. Just win the game.
Win the game.
A little 100%. Stat here too from the UT. Coors Field is yielding the fourth fewest home runs per game of any Major League ballpark this season.
That's because the Rockies. That's because the Rockies are hitting in it.
Well, that's true. Part of those balls.
They got a few homers this series.
Those balls look dead. They look dead to me when we hit them.
There's been more complaints this year of Peter Fairbanks, who complains about a lot.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay closer who's injured, but he went off crazy when he blew a save there earlier this year about the feel of the baseballs.
Interesting.
He wasn't the only one. I mean, so maybe the humidor has been tweaked. It's to new levels of, you know, disaster. Yeah. Oh, wow. Fumble.
Just humidity.
Ello's dropping his water bottle.
It's interesting because Jesse and Tony. Oh, my mic flag's up.
Yeah, it's upside down.
It's all right. Just keep going.
Is that a political statement or something? Yeah. Sammy, are you in distress right now?
Blink twice if you're okay.
Blink twice if you need to get a piece of pizza.
We're not going to start disconnecting the mic and everything, so if you're watching, sorry. But it's funny because Jesse and Tony, it might have been the first game of this series, Tony made a remark during the broadcast, something to the effect of, and I don't know if he mentioned it on the show, that didn't seem like the ball was, you know, doing what it usually does at a Coors Field as far as just the jump on it. Who knows? But yeah, it's been different there, to your point, Annie.
But a win is a win, and I think we would all agree when the Padres played the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Brewers, for most of those series, the offense was pretty potent. Then it seemed to stall out, get a little streaky against the Blue Jays, against the Rockies. Where are you at with the offense? And let me put it to you this way. What's one thing that you are encouraged by with this offense? And what's one thing that you're maybe concerned about with this offense? And I'll start with you, Woods.
I love Jackson Merrill. And I love his ABs. And I'm just so impressed with him. We just talked to Jake Cronenworth on our show. And he's very impressed by him, too. The ABs have been phenomenal. And it's a weird feeling to watch a team and a rookie hitting at the bottom of the lineup. And you can almost go get a beer or go get a water or go to the restroom because you're like, I know he's going to give me a good AB. I haven't seen the guy get embarrassed really yet by anybody, and it's a weird feeling. You know, I'm not expecting a two-run homer from him, but I'm expecting him to put the ball in play. I'm just so encouraged by his future and what he can bring to this team. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of former big leaguers about him and analysts, and they say, you know, and we've talked about it here, you know, that power, it can come. Don't worry about it right now. Keep putting bat to ball. Good things have been happening for him. He's been living right because balls are dropping in. Balls are finding holes. Productive outs from him last night are just huge. I get so excited with a productive out. But as far as, you know, concern goes, Xander's coming out of it a little bit and looks a little bit better. That was kind of my main concern. You know, when Manny gets back, can he put this team on his back a little bit, start lifting the baseball? You know, he's high ground ball rate right now. Start lifting the baseball, yakking it out of the yard like only he can do. But we need more pop. That's really the only concern for me is I'd like to see a little more pop, a couple more threats, guys that put a little fear of God into the pitcher when they stride to the plate.
Sam?
As far as concern, I think a really big key for this team is that the top four, and you could even include Matt Waldron in that mix as well, the rotation needs to be really good. I think that's such an important part of this season as it gets later and later. And look, Cease has been great. King has been great at times. It's been a little rough at times, up and down for Darvish and Musgrove, and obviously Darvish on the IL right now. But that's the consistency of that group. I'm not saying they have to pitch as well as they did last year, although, right, last year it got them 82 wins, which is something I think we'll try to figure out forever. But, you know, getting more consistency out of the top four in that rotation, I think, will be really important moving forward. So I guess to put it in a concern lens, it's, you know, what if you don't end up getting that from guys like Darvish and Musgrove? I think they will. I think they will. I think, you know, I think all four of those guys are going to settle in. Obviously, Cease has been great. But to me, that's something that's got to happen, you know, along with the offense, the bullpen, all of it. You know, they need their starting pitching, those top four guys, to kind of lead the way, I think.
I'll build off Woodsy's point in terms of the offense, because it's a different offense this year. In fact, you and I just talked about this on yesterday's show, Annie, and on a couple of different shows. You can look at the numbers year to year, 23 to 24. This team is striking out about 2% less than they did before. They're walking about 1% less than they did before.
Doesn't the strikeouts to you feel like they're K-ing less this year than last?
That's what I'm saying.
Like a lot. Like it feels more than that, doesn't it?
Well, even a couple percents is hundreds of strike. You know, a couple hundred strikeouts at the end of the year.
That's true.
So, as a result, okay. Oh, and third part, we took out of the lineup three guys who were complete all or nothing hitters in terms of Gary Sanchez, Trent Grisham, and Carpen Cruz at DH. And we replace them with three contact hitters, right? Merrill, Camposano, for now, Wade, but all guys who put the ball in play. So, yes, we have less power. Yes, we have more contact than we've ever had. And how is that negatively impacting the offense? Ground ball double plays. Two more yesterday, 28 now. I believe we're one off the big league lead for double plays. We're right there in terms of rate stat for the most double plays grounded into per game. And those are the silent killer right now of the Padres' offense. It's something it's hard to fix. Hey, stop grounding into double plays, Chris. Yeah.
Right? I'd love to.
but it's one of the things that's short-circuiting the offense.
Yeah, and I don't know. The only way I can fix it is to start runners a little bit more often and try to stay out of that double play. But, you know, I think the offense has more length, right, this year than it had last year. And as you know, Woodsy said, you know, go get a sandwich. You actually could go get a sandwich last year from 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Absolutely,
you probably weren't going to miss anything. But now, you know, when the bottom of the order comes up, you got just as much chance of a rally starting as you do if the top of the order's up.
Maybe more.
Maybe, right, the way they've been going. So that's my big exciting thing about what I've seen so far. My concern is that guys that are in the middle of this lineup right now, can they continue produce like major league teams need from their 4, 5, 6 hitters? You know I love Mr. Relevant. He knows I love him. But I don't know that he's a big league number four hitter right now, you know, or ever. You know, he's doing a great job. He's filling in. He's doing what he can. They got to get Manny back healthy. They got to, you know, get the middle of the order, you know, with some more bop and take a little of the pressure off Profar and Camposano and Kim.
Because he's at the high end of production, Profar, along with Merrill.
He has been, but I mean, honestly, we worry that Profar is a career this. Right now he's this. So will he be able to stay this? I hope so.
All right, love your thoughts.
I worry about it.
You're listening to the Padres Roundtable here on 97.3 The Fan, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Let's circle back to Matt Waldron. And I'll start with Craig here because I know Craig's answer already.
Right, yes.
No one has pumped Matt Waldron more than Craig Elston has.
I love it.
Sometimes you get a knuckleballer and you're like, that's a novelty guy. He's not going to be able to last. And through the start of the season, and we saw it yesterday, 6 innings of one run ball in the thin Colorado air, he's been good. He's been a really formidable number 5 starter. Craig, are you buying? Is he an established starter in the big leagues? Is he a bona fide starter in the big leagues?
Boy, he took a huge step yesterday. He took a huge step yesterday because as the number one Waldron Cauldron backer in San Diego, I didn't want him to start in Colorado. You know, I mean, I texted Chris, yesterday I looked it up. I looked up knuckleballers at Coors Field.
Me too.
And Tom Cattiotti pitched there three times, and he got blown up three times. Like one time, one inning, seven runs, and then they stopped starting him there. They would literally juggle the rotation and go like, you know what? We're going to start you on 8 days rest in Cincinnati a couple days later. Ari Dickey, they never pitched him.
He wouldn't do it.
There, right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He did a bullpen. He said, I'm not doing this.
So I was straight up worried. But then you saw, what did he do? He attacked the strike zone. He uses his pitch mix. Like, he trusts what he has. And while that fastball, cutter, like the sweeper, they aren't plus major league pitches by themselves, the knuckleball changes everything because he has that danger and he's throwing it one of three. Now the hitter's always wondering. He's always back pocketing. Oh, this could be a knuckler. And that turns that 91 into 93. It turns that cutter into a little bit sharper. So I've been very impressed. The thing that we talked about on our show from the beginning, Annie and guys, is that he was kind of sneakily the best positioned. He had thrown over 130 innings last year. He had worked through a lot of stuff, and he is different pitching here than in El Paso. So it's been a great start, and I think he'll hold the job probably all year.
And Chris, do you think he can sustain this for the season?
Although April is a month for liars, right? I mean, it makes us all look bad, you know, when summer comes and we look back and remember all of the prognostications and proclamations we made in April. This guy will never do that. This guy is always going to do that. And it probably won't turn out that way. I will say this. You can't ask for much more out of your number five starter than a ERA under four, and going in and pitching solid five, six innings every time out. And that's what he's given so far. The knuckleball, I think he can be effective because he's got these other pitches. He's not just a novelty. And you're right, Craig. You know, the fastball looks 97 from Waldron because you've got to be prepared for that knuckleball in case you get it. So, you know, let's just keep doing what we're doing. I'm very pleased with him so far.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, Woodsy, what do you see from this rotation when you have a number five starter that is able to be as impactful as he has been?
My thing with knuckleballers has always been, well, if it's so great, then more people should do it. I mean, it's a hard pitch to hit. It's a really hard pitch to throw. Yeah. I want it for him, too. Seems like a really solid dude, a hard worker. Loved that start. Was
terrified about that start yesterday. Did the same kind of research you did, Craig, and thought this is not going to go well. And for whatever reason, Mount Waldron convinced himself, no, no, I'd prefer to throw it. It's dry, and I like it dry, and I don't want it slick. And if it's dry, I can really do what I want. Great. Whatever you got to tell yourself to make it happen. And he went out and he executed last night. The run support for him last night was huge. Huge. Massive. And
pitcher gets four in the first ought to be able to take it from there. But they don't always do it.
No, they don't.
So give him credit.
100%, man. I give him a ton of credit.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, having a guy that can do something that really nobody else is doing is awesome until it's not. You know, and until it just can't get the feel. Because when it comes out and it doesn't knuckle and it's just floating, it's easy pitch to hit, you know, and those guys are really good hitters. So I loved it. I loved that whole thing. I was a little bit on pins and needles watching it last night. But after he settled in, I was like, oh, he's cruising. He walked those guys, got out of trouble. I've been really impressed. You cannot, like you said, not to belabor that point, that's way more than you expect from your number five guy, and he's delivered. So it's been awesome to see.
Yeah, Sam, you talked to him a lot in spring training. Is he exceeding the expectations that maybe even he had for himself?
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember with Matt Waldron, two things. He doesn't consider himself a traditional knuckleballer, and the pitch mix obviously suggests that. And I also think he is very much still in the process of learning how to use it among the rest of his arsenal. He called the pitch to me, and it stood out to me in spring training during the conversation we had on air. He called it an uncompetitive pitch, which always stood out to me because I thought it kind of gave you a glimpse kind of how he thinks about it, because it is so unpredictable and he's still figuring out how and when to exactly use it. So I think this is something I talked about on your show, Annie and Craig, during spring training. I just feel like there's still a lot of untapped potential and unknown with Matt Waldron, because I still think he's in the process of figuring out who he is as a major league pitcher. But to everybody's point, look, he's your number five starter. And so far what you've got from him, if you can get that all year, great. And even the two outings that were so-so, early runs, you know, and if you look at those innings, they could have gone a little bit differently. Yeah. He was close to limiting damage. And then the other three have been really good.
Yeah.
And obviously yesterday was terrific. So if he can keep doing what he's doing, doesn't have to be perfect. It might be a little up and down. But I think he's, for a number five guy, he's provided what you hoped he would provide. And again, I think for him personally, I think he's still figuring things out. And he's made, 13 starts at the major league level? He's still a very young starting pitcher.
He does that thing, too, I think it's a credit to Mike Schilt. It's something that I don't know that Schilt's actually come out and said it, but it's obviously really important to him. If you give up early runs, it's fine. You're going to go out and wear at least, five innings at the least? Like, we needed innings to be replaced so badly on this team. Hey, man, you gave up four in the first. Sorry. Not yanked, not going to the bullpen early. And I know it drives some fans crazy. Like, get him out of there. Get King out of there. It's important to...
No, that throws your whole staff into...
It
whole
does.
Bullpen,
into
everything.
Disarray. It really does. And,
can't do
you know, I think about, you know, former managers we had, and I go, maybe this is the way, you know? And there's so many ball games left, and there's so many bullets that you can use. Hey, you know what? If you give up runs early, let's trust the offense to make a comeback, as they have a couple of times. But you also, day is not done. You're still going to go out and compete and give us everything you have. I've really enjoyed that from Mike Schilt early on.
And I think that's a really important point when you talk about pitching in general. And it's something I think the Padres have actually done well this season. When guys give up early runs, they have very often found a way to settle down.
Yeah,
there was the week with the comeback against the Cubs, and then the comeback wins in L.A., big parts of those wins, you know, Pedro Avila gives up four runs against the Cubs in that first inning of work to make it 8-0.
Three more innings or something?
Right, and then settles down. There was Michael King in, I guess it was the Friday in L.A. when they came back. Early trouble, but he pitched two scoreless innings to end the outing. And, you know, sometimes I get it on the post-game tweets or phone calls, you know, people saying, well, why in the fourth inning didn't they take out the starting pitcher? You know, you can't.
you got a bullpen that you've got to save in a span of 13 games and 13 days like they are right now. So sometimes you have to have some trust in your starter that they can settle in and give you some length. I also think with Waldron, one final point for me on him is, you know, I find him very cool, calm, and collected, which I like. If you ever hear him talk, hear the post game he does, whatever, just very cool, calm, collected. Which I think is a really good thing and maybe says something about the ability he's had so far to sort of settle in after early trouble. So maybe that's part of it. Just kind of seems to have everything under control as far as the emotions.
One good thing about Waldron that I wanted to add is that if anything goes wrong with Waldron at any point this season, he can always just pass off his next start to Sam Levitt, the only other person in town who knows how to throw a knuckleball.
What?
Since Waldron taught you the knuckleball during spring training. I remember that video. Yes. You may have to pull it out at some point.
Yes, I may
too
have
bad we
to.
Don't have a baseball right now.
Oh, yes, I'd like to see you give us a little tutorial. Oh, what do you mean you don't remember?
Well, I don't remember.
Looking forward to the lesson.
Come on.
Dylan Cease, 1.82
well done.
Earned run average. He's been tremendous. Four out of his five starts have been quality starts. Okay, two questions here. Do you consider Dylan Cease the ace of the rotation? Second question, take it where you want it. Are there any concerns? You mentioned a few, Sam. Are there any concerns about this rotation as a whole? Woodsy.
I love Dylan Cease. I have a huge, huge man crush on him. And it's velo. I like velo.
Do you want him to read a slider poem to you?
The slider poem's great. His slider's nasty. I don't like necessarily the Blake Snell comparison. I love Blake. It was up and down roller coaster. It was gut wrenching. It was nauseating. Grab a bucket. We're in for it. He's got the nastiest stuff I'd seen, and he could hump it up there too. And but with Dylan, I don't know, man. I there's a confidence that he has. He is an artist. He is. And yeah, and we talked to Eno Saris about it today. He will lose command of the fastball every now and then. But they talked about it, too, on the broadcast of how Dylan Cease is one of the rare guys that can hang a slider and you still can't hit it. It's right. Such an easy pitch to hit. The hanging slider is your dream, the cement mixer. Well, his is hard for guys to hit. Now, they've hit him hard at times this season, but, man, watching him pitch, he's absolutely the ace of the staff. And if he's my game one starter, if playoffs started today, period, the end. I want to get that first dub. I've got the most confidence in him to get it. I love him, and I love how serious he takes his job. I love how much he studies the art of pitching, how much he knows about the art of pitching. I've learned so much already watching him. I'm massively impressed. Kudos to AJ Preller for pulling that deal off at that 11th hour, 12th hour. I shudder to think where we'd be without Dylan Cease right now. He's a huge part of this season. Huge.
Craig, would you agree? Ace?
I mean, yeah. From stuff, you know, from performance.
Demeanor.
It's one of the things we said at the very beginning, right? After the first turn, it doesn't matter. You're in a circle now. Yeah. Number one is meaningless. But if you were going to set a playoff rotation, you'd clearly do that. To get to the playoffs, the Padres are going to need to have that rotation be good all summer long. And when you talk about concerns, I think right now this is establishing itself as the biggest variable on the team. Because right now, pitching at the top of his range, right? Like, you can't expect him to be better than 1.9
no doubt.
ERA, and quite possibly he'll be a little worse than that.
Bob Gibson was 1.12. There's room to go lower.
Yeah, as long as we can keep the humidor with the no-go juice on, we are set. But right now, Waldron's the second most consistent guy, and that's a problem. Joe, I'm feeling confident, is getting there.
Yep.
It seems like he's working down a path toward that successful Joe that we count on. His velo is down, so I'm still just keeping an eye on that. Like, how does that go into June? You, what do we get? We don't know. And honestly, I did not think Michael King would have given up 7 home runs by now and be averaging like a homer every 3 innings allowed. That's wild. That obviously can't continue. He's got to keep the ball in the yard. And his variability has been an up and down for the team so far.
Yeah. I you know what? I disagree to a certain extent. Cease has been the best pitcher. Can't argue that. I still wonder if the playoffs started tomorrow and everybody was healthy, who they would name as the game one starter.
I am too.
I still think they would name Yu Darvish as the game one starter. He just feels like he's still that guy. But, you know, I don't know for sure. The only other thing I want to say about Dylan Cease is I can't remember any longer the names of the prospects that the Padres gave up to get him. And I know there was a lot of hand-wringing when that trade was made. Oh, we gave up this, we gave up that, and Steven Wilson? You know, what are we doing? You know, prospects are that, and maybe some of them will pan out, but Dylan Cease's don't come along too often, as we're starting to find out. This was a hell of a good trade by A.J. Preller.
Yeah.
Sam, who's your game one starter? If the playoffs started today in April...
And they pretty much have for a lot of our fans. Right. So,
for the National Lacrosse League.
Which I totally get. I support.
I mean, right now, I understand what you're saying with Darvish, but it would be Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been great, obviously. I think, and it's something you know that's been pointed out on the radio broadcast a handful of times. He's really unique in the sense, like you were saying, I think, Woods, that he can live up in the zone with some of his sliders and off-speed stuff, but he gets a lot of swings and misses. And look, the numbers, you know, say it for us. He's been terrific so far. You know, look, I think this rotation has a lot of potential. Joe seems to be, I agree with you, getting into that kind of groove. And we saw it last year. It was a little bit different last year because he had the kettlebell incident, and then he had the feet in Mexico City.
Yeah.
We know it was very start and stop, but remember, he settled in for like 2 months there before the shoulder issue. He was great. So you're trying to get to that point again, and we know with Joe, once he sort of gets it going, seems to really roll, seems to maybe be getting there. Look, to your point, the variance on King, you can see why when the trade was made, everybody was like, oh, he's got the stuff. He's going to be really good because he can harness it at times. And look at what he did in Milwaukee. There have been a couple now where you can see it. If he can just get it consistent, oh, yeah, Michael King could be great in that starting role. And obviously, Yu Darvish, you need the consistency too. So right now for me, it's Dylan Cease clearly as your number one in a playoff series right now in April. But, you know, for the other guys, it's, you know, in different ways, it's about just kind of getting on a roll and finding some consistency. But having a guy like Cease at the top right now, doing what he's doing, and you pretty much know what you're going to get right now is very important.
You're listening to the Padres Roundtable. We're about halfway through the roundtable here on 97.3 The Fan, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. I'm going to switch it up a little bit. Let's go to two hot topics in baseball. One having to do with umpires, one having to do with fans. We'll start with the umpires. We saw Jerks and Profar get the hook. I thought the hook was a little quick. We talked about it on Annie and Elston, and I think there may have been a warning in between him throwing down the bat and throwing down the helmet. I still thought it was a little quick. Mike Schilt gets thrown out as well, right? And he was begging to be thrown out, right?
Oh, yeah.
But then you see Aaron Boone in New York get thrown out when a fan is heckling behind him. Aren't umpires supposed to be trying to keep guys in games, not throwing them out? Is this a bad look for an umpire situation that is already on the brink of, you know, should there be robo-ops, should there not? What does this do for the umpire situation? Who wants to take it first? I see you.
I'm a basketball referee.
I was just going to say, I'm a referee's apologist right now.
I stick up for umpires probably more than most. I honestly, as soon as I saw Profar throw the bat and then the helmet, I thought he was going to get run. Okay. You can't show up an umpire like that. Yeah. But I thought that was one of my favorite things that's happened so far this season because of the way Mike Schilt came out and said, well, if you're going to run him, then you're going to have to run me. And that, to me, is what I want in my manager, somebody sticking up for the players. And even though managers can say, I got my players' backs, when you show it like that, that goes a long way. So I thought that was a big moment early in the season. And believe it or not, I'm going to defend the umpire in New York, too, on Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone has made this bed. He has been...
His brother said it on our show yesterday.
He has been ripping umpires left and right for 3, 4, 5, 6 years now.
You're saying he had it coming.
I don't think he would deserved it in this instant, but I can understand an umpire having his antenna up because he knows he's doing an Aaron Boone game. And the umpire in this case looks like a fool because he threw him out for no reason. But I don't think this happens if Aaron Boone's reputation doesn't precede himself.
His brother Brett was on our show yesterday, and Brett said, all right, so I asked him, have you talked to Aaron since the incident? He goes, no. He goes, if I texted Aaron after every time he got thrown out of a game,
right.
He goes, their dad and their mom, and it was Brett, and they were all going to a doctor's appointment. It's the only way they can get him to go to a doctor appointment now. And they got out of the car, and Booney's mom goes, your brother just got thrown out of the game. And he's like, well, what else is new? And she's like, this one wasn't his fault. And he goes, I've talked to Aaron over the years about, like, hey, we get it. You love your players. You stick up for your players. Enough's enough already. They need you managing games.
Yeah.
I thought that one obviously was an absurd one, but I guess I hadn't thought about the reputation preceding him, and it absolutely has. You know, for me, the thing that's always bugged me is what I don't like to see from umpires, any official, is the ripping of the mask off, the walk towards, yeah. The daring. I'm going to dare you to get thrown out. I dare you to say something. That, to me, is a little bit power trippy. Man, I don't have the right temperament to be an umpire. I'd never be an umpire. I mean, I don't have it. I'm thin-skinned. I'm too sensitive. I get too fired up. There's no way I'd be a good umpire. I sure like to rip them when they make mistakes, though. I sure do.
Isn't it, Craig, let me ask you, because you're, I think, as analytic as most of us, if not more. The umpiring, to me, is about the same as it's always been in terms of the success rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the eyeballs are 20 times more than they've ever been. So now if there's a close play at second base, it gets tweeted out all over the country
times.
For 6 days. Whereas in the day, Davey Lopes got thrown out on a bad call. He went, picked his helmet up, and went to the dugout, and the game moved on.
Yeah, well, I'll actually say I think umpires are better than they've ever been in 2024 because they are subject to that scrutiny in games when I was – man, I've remembered this my whole life. Remember Doug Harvey?
Doug Harvey.
They called him God, right? Like he was like the king
–
King bleep umpire.
San Diego
in the National League. And that's back when they did National and American League umpires. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a kid growing up, there was one fall. Dodgers were out of it. It was the last game of the year. They were hosting the Houston Astros. And Doug Harvey came out and said, today the strike zone is 3 feet wide. And, I mean, the game went an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And he called, you know, 55 pitches outside the zone that day. And it was like, it's cool. It's Doug Harvey.
He's God.
For all of my life growing up, the strike zone was whatever the ump said it was.
Yeah.
It used to be a thing like, oh, well, this ump that's is right. The low and outside ump, right?
He likes it up.
Box
he likes
on
it
TV.
Down.
Well, that's the thing. There's no box anymore.
The Eric Gregg games were in 1997.
Right.
That's not that long ago.
Right.
When he was given Levon Hernandez the entire batter's box.
Yes, right. 3 feet.
And he would be out of the league for that.
That's right.
Now.
So that's my question to you, though.
Yeah.
Would he?
I think he would,
so
because of the umpire scorecards, because of the way that they get reviewed every day.
I don't think he could ump like that anymore. I agree with Craig.
What about the union and all that?
Yeah,
right?
So Angel still has a gig, and I know Angel gets calls, right? He absolutely does. I think for me, the Angel Hernandez of the world, those guys are the ones that are spoiling for a fight. And that's that takes away from the enjoyment of the game for me.
Agreed.
With
right.
The hat, the mascot. What'd you say? Did you say something?
Yeah.
That's what I thought you said. That to me is like, come on, man. Nobody paid to see you out here.
I think from a balls and strikes perspective, I have little problem. I think it's a really hard job, and I think none of us who watch it and tweet about it from the outside understand how difficult that is. Yeah. So that doesn't really bother me, and I agree with, I think, Craig, what you said. I think umpires are better today with that because of the eyeballs on it and the scrutiny on it than they've ever been. And I don't mind the human element of the game. I really don't. Honestly, if you gave me a choice between replay and no replay, I might say no replay. Just
shivers.
Because.
No way.
But hey, it creates storylines.
It does.
Things are wrong. I get sometimes it's terrible. The Galarraga perfect game that gets blown. But the point being, I don't –
I don't mind the actual umpiring. The only thing that drives me a little crazy, and look, it was entertaining the other day with Boone. I was kind of harsh on Twitter about the Boone situation because I just thought it was ridiculous.
Sammy, you've never
it
been
was,
harsh on Twitter.
Well, I made one reply that was harsher than usual.
It was a quote tweet.
Yeah, quote tweet. Yeah, it was a reply, actually.
I
like the human element, but just to the Profar thing, this is the only thing that I just, you know. And in baseball, it's not like the NBA or the NFL, where if you say something or you do something, you get an initial. Well, you can get an initial warning,
teed up,
but not formally. Not a technical foul.
Sure.
You know, a double technical, you're out. But a technical foul, you're not out. The NFL, you get a flag thrown, you're not automatically disqualified from the game. I thought, for example, on the Profar thing, you're right. Once he throws the bat and the helmet down, you are officially living on the edge. And part of that's on Jerkson. But I don't like when there's that aggressiveness from the umpire. And we saw it the other day with Boone. Like when he looks in the dugout and says,
I don't care.
I hear one more thing, you're out of here.
Well, he was in trouble. He'd already thrown him out. Now he was
right.
He was backpedaling at this point.
I just
messed up.
I wish
but
they
he couldn't unthrow him out.
Right.
Correct.
I wish we either that umpires were maybe a little bit more liberal on or gave players more room, okay, and sometimes they do, or we had something before the ejection, because
a flag.
When a guy gets thrown out, okay,
God,
when
I'm great.
If a Manny
red
Machado
red
if,
card,
you know,
yeah. Yellow, yeah. Card.
Yeah. Something, yellow card, something,
throw it out there,
right? If a Manny Machado, let's say, gets thrown out in the first inning,
sucks,
and that's the only game that your 10-year-old goes to see all year, that stinks.
Yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, to me,
yeah,
I wish there was something, a formal penalty that could come before an ejection, and in baseball we don't have
yellow cards. Give the umpires yellow cards. Give the umpires yellow cards.
I
want
to see the side eye that Manny gives one of those umpires. But in fairness, I love what you're saying, because you're right. People come to see these players, and when they're thrown out in the first inning. Okay, my second hot topic thing that we'll run through here, and you guys have all probably talked about it on your shows. The fans and Cameron Maybin, old friend Cameron Maybin, who got on the lovely Twitter and said, you know what? There is a difference between San Diego and New York. I played in both places. New York fans hold their players more accountable. They're meaner. San Diego fans, they're a little bit too nice. Now, Cameron Maybin, for perspective, never played in a packed Petco Park night after night. He played in front of 10,000 people on a Monday night. The team was usually out of it by the All-Star break. It was not a team with playoff expectations. But Sam grew up in New York, and I'm curious, the bones of his argument, hey, New York is different. They're just, you're held to a different standard versus being supportive of your team.
Yeah.
What do you think is at the core there?
Look, I think New York is different than San Diego in a variety of ways. Look, I think the media is different. Number one, there's more of it. I think the media, and this is not to say that we're quote-unquote soft here, but can be harsher for sure on the whole, right? Just the intensity of it. It's a bigger place. There's way more. I mean, go check out when the Mets and Yankees are in town. There is a difference, right, in just the amount of media and the scrutiny of it and the intensity of it. So maybe from the media perspective, I understand it. You know, look, I don't agree on the fan base part of it really at all, okay? Are the fans here necessarily as vocal in a negative way as they are in New York? Do you hear as much booing, or are they as quick to get on their guys? No, I think you could argue, and again, this is just my 2+ seasons here, this fan base, it takes more to get to that point for a Padres fan. But as far as the expectations, like when I read something, you know, basically implying that, you know, Soto wasn't held to the same standard here as he is in New York, I disagree with that. The place was packed every night last year. This fan base and that crowd had World Series expectations, and I thought held the team to those expectations. We did hear boos last year.
Yeah.
Okay, were they as quick to boo? Maybe not. Maybe it's different in that sense. But I disagree that, you know, that there is this massive gap in the standard that a Yankees fan has versus what a Padres fan has. Are there differences? Sure, but I thought last year The standard was set pretty high. The Padres didn't meet them.
Fans were pissed.
Yeah, they were. I mean,
pissed.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I think the standard is equally as high here. I think maybe the rush to vocally express it doesn't come as quick, but I disagreed with that.
I get the sense in New York, too, sometimes if you just say it loud enough, that's fine with the fans. If you just scream, he needs to do this, and he needs to do that, and you hear it, you see. Now, you talk about eyeballs. You see these tweets, sent out all the time. Oh man, listen to him go off on Aaron Judge or go off on Juan Soto or whatever. Just because you say it loudly doesn't mean it's true. I find that a lot of those sports talking ads, like, look, Mad Dog has made a really nice name for himself, makes a lot more money than we all do combined. He doesn't know baseball in 2024. He doesn't watch his show, listen to his show. He doesn't know baseball like maybe he did in 1984. Right. It's different. Sal Licata, we played his audio. He's one of our colleagues from, I think, The Fan in New York.
WFA.
I listened to him screaming at Juan Soto, four pitches out of the zone. No, he's got a swing there. No, he doesn't. He got on base for Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is behind him. Like, he did his job there. He's not going to swing at a ball. So
swing the bat, bro.
That's it. Swing the bat. Swing. You got to swing the bat. And it's like, he's not going to swing at a ball out of the zone. Why would you want him to do that? And so sometimes it just comes off as uneducated. We can't – not everything in baseball belongs in buckets. You know, New York is this. It's so nuanced. It's so different.
Great point.
And we try to put everything in buckets. We try to put our players in buckets. And we try to put our fans in buckets. Man, I know some really smart Padres fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some smart Yankee fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some smart Red Sox fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some really nice Dodger fans. I know some really mean ones. You know, it's you can't bucket everything in this game. You can't do that in baseball.
Short and simple, the Padres fans are filling their ballpark to the highest capacity by percentage of any team, including New York Yankees, including New York Mets. And point two, in 2023, this team failed to meet the pressure of the situation,
correct,
which was 3.5 million fans or 3+ million fans in the stands, looking up on a Tuesday and seeing 39,000 people in the house and going, "Uh-oh, we're losing 2-0 to Cincinnati," you know, or whatever
again,
right? You know, the Pittsburgh minor leaguers shutting us out again, and those guys caved under that pressure, and they performed when the pressure went off, when the fans stopped coming for the last two homestands because they knew the season was over.
Right.
So don't give me that pressure is so much better and it makes you so much better in New York, but here in San Diego, it's just charm and soft. Give me a break. We proved it last year.
Why don't the Jets win? Ever.
Right.
They're in New York.
Why don't they win? Right. Higher standard.
Ever. Why don't the Giants win?
How about the Knicks?
Ever. The Knicks are finally making a run.
I would just like Cameron
the Mets
Maben.
For the most part.
I would just like Cameron Maben to come to San Diego and be introduced before a game at Petco Park. And let's play his comments so that everybody's aware of them.
I think it's,
and we'll find out whether or not we hold our people to a higher standard.
I think it was just ignorance, don't you?
He
loves San Diego.
He's not a bad dude.
I don't think he meant whatever he meant by it, it didn't come off. But I took it personally.
Right. Oh, and I took it personally.
It's a little bit of a badge of honor. Like, you have to be a fan in New York to be legit.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's just, I don't think that's accurate.
It's not true.
We can boo just as loudly as everybody. And we hated when Juan Soto walked all the time just as much as the guy in New York's hating it right now.
I think, Craig, I think you made a good point in the
what about mine, Sam? Well, not really.
No, yours.
So elegant.
That
was good.
I thought, you know, you describing the 40-something thousand people being it there every night is a good point, because I think in New York, whether there are 35,000 or 18,000 people at the ballpark, the pressure, I think, can come off a little bit more vocal. Right, in the sense of, it comes off as booze. It comes off as like, go watch the Mets' first five games of the year, when they
brutal.
Were 0-5,
brutal.
And there was nobody there, but guess what? They were getting booed.
Here, maybe it's a little bit less you hear it, but man, with the way people show up, it creates that same kind of pressure. And last year, you're right. It was a lot of, hey, there are 40-something thousand people here, but they're sitting on their hands because there's not much to cheer about, and this is going south.
It's an auto, in New York, Boston, Philly, it's an auto response. You struck out, you're a bum. No, the guy's a bum. And then you go, you hit, you get four hits out of seven at bats. Oh, I love this guy. It's just bipolar. Like, it's just weird. Like, it's a weird way to fan and live. It is. It's just weird. I look at this team like I look at my kids sometimes, where I'm like, I love you so much. I would do anything for you. You're making me insane. You're literally making me insane. And so it doesn't mean I don't love you, but I'm not going to be like, you're a bum. You know, you're a bum to my kids. It doesn't help. It doesn't do anything.
You're so right with the automatic response.
It's an auto response.
Hey, I was the kid sitting in the upper deck of Shea Stadium. You know, I'm like a sophomore in high school. I would be yelling.
Yeah, throwing sunflower seeds.
Yelling at Rico Bronya.
No, that's a little bit
before.
It was more like... Who is I yelling at? Like Jason Bay.
Jason Bay.
But we yelled at him too in San Diego.
But then you see him maybe walking on the street. You're like, hey.
Yeah. So you're right. It's like an auto response, and I've been involved in it too. But it's not my finest moments.
All right. We're making our way through the Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. I appreciate you guys taking part in those hot topics. Let's get back to the Padres for a second over here.
Oh, bums. They're all bums. Every one of them. You're all bums.
Walk less.
Maybe what you need to do is give a lesson in fanning.
They called me.
No, that's a joke.
No, but just for that's one last reference, the Brooklyn Dodgers nickname was
the Bums.
The Bums.
The Bums.
That's it.
The Bums.
I had the
whole franchise.
I had a Mets fan friend text me, who I guess is watching, text me and say, I boo before I sit down.
That's exactly right. It's a prerequisite.
Philly's the same way, man. And they take pride in it. And that's fine. It's their shit. I'm not telling you. I said shtick.
I just got nervous here for a second.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I'm sure you did.
It the condition to be that way. It's just a weird way to live for me. It's just a weird way to live. Automatically pissed off before the game starts.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely been guilty of it myself too. And hey, I've been known to scream at the TV, you know, and call names and stuff, but never really at the game. Yeah, it doesn't really help.
All right, I have two questions left, and we're gonna keep an eye on the clock here. Get through this next one in the next 7-8 minutes. Manny Machado, we are giving him his best, he and Yaine, as they receive their first child into the world here, either already have or shortly will be doing that. So we wish them the best. Manny Machado, not in Colorado this week. When he comes back from his arm injury and he's able to play third base, when he's able to get out there defensively, he's not going to be out there every day. It's going to be Manny maybe playing third base one day, DH in the next day, 2 days at third, coming back maybe having a DH day. There's an interesting bench happening here with the Padres. There's Donovan Solano mysteriously somewhere in this system.
Somewhere, right? Yes, in the ether.
What should the Padres do with that DH spot once Manny is back to playing third base?
Boy, first of all, I just want to say I'm excited and really looking forward to when he plays third base, because that's something I miss at the ballpark.
So much.
It's just watching any ground ball in his area. Because that is about as much fun as I have watching Padres baseball. Yep. And we talked about their fielding issues earlier in the program. He's a pretty good third baseman who ought to make things a little better overall.
Yep.
So let's just say that. I don't have a good answer for DH right now. I mean, I really don't. I mean, right now it's a platoon of Tyler Wade and Eggy Rosario. I don't see anything different unless something changes. Unless they really believe, what's Donovan Solano, 36 years old?
He's 36 years old.
You know, numbers, I mean, he was
Donnie Barrow, baby.
Well, look, he won the Silver Slugger in the COVID season of 2020.
Yep.
But I mean, since then he hasn't really hit much. I'm not ready to give him everyday DH, so I would honestly just at this point, until something changes, go Wade and Eggy.
Craig?
I would sign Brandon Belt.
Yes, I know. I was leaving that for you.
I mean, the price has gone down. It is the end of April. The man is unemployed.
Wants to play.
It's not going
to
be an $8 million contract. All of these deals are like $3 million with incentives. And I disagree slightly on Solano. I mean, he's hit 280 or better every year.
Okay.
Like last year, he had a 381 on base against righties. So I've got some excitement about, but like if you just tell me, well, Donovan Solano's our everyday DH the rest of the year, how much better would this team be? How much would it be a little more consistent with one more dangerous left-handed bat? We want a little more pop.
A little more pop.
On the lineup. Wouldn't it be a little more pop? And Brandon Belt isn't Gary Sanchez. He's not going to hit 170 with homers or Grisham. He hits a little bit. He commands the zone. So,
sign Brandon Belt.
Do you have any reservation about? I know you want to sign him, but is there any part of you that wants to hang on to whatever money they have left over in case they need it at the trade deadline? And they've come up with another hole somewhere that'll need to be filled.
I do, but my counter is I think the price is now below the spot where Brandon Belt handicaps you. Yeah, I mean, just looking at every other signing that's happened in baseball right now, he's out there. He's withering on a vine. Like, he needs to play. So, like, even now, if you signed him, it would be 3 weeks before you saw him, just like Donovan Solano. So that's why I'd say get him in. Get him into AAA. Get him to the Arizona complex. You know, get him going. And then, my gosh, this summer we could really be 1-9.
Sam is the DH answer on this team.
I mean, look, he knows all these guys really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think
we're
all going to have the same answer here. I mean, unless you go make a move, I mean, it's Rosario and Wade, right? I mean, look, I guess if it would be a way to give Graham Pauly consistent at-bats every day. I think that's an unfair ask of him to be a DH, and that's the way you're going to get him his playing time.
But that's another question. What's happening with Graham Pauly, and is he better off up here at the major league level not playing every day versus being in the minors and playing every day?
It's interesting because I really thought coming out of spring, in the case of Pauly, because it looked like Merrill for a while was going to be the center fielder, in the case of Pauly, that if he was here, he would play almost every day and get those consistent at-bats. I felt like that's what we continued to hear, really, from Mike Schilt as he was asked about it during spring training. Hasn't been that way. And, I think Graham's been put in a pretty tough spot so far. Makes the team out of spring training. He's not playing regularly at all. This is somebody who, like Jackson, who's done a great job, who has very limited experience at the upper levels of the minor leagues. So I think for him, if he is not some way, somehow, going to get those at-bats in the major leagues, he's got to be at a place where he can get ABs regularly. And that's nothing against him. Yeah. That's nothing against him. I think the Padres believe he's going to be a big part of their future one way or the other. But he needs at bats. So, look, unless you're going to do that for the DH spot, look, Rosario and Wade have both been productive at times. Yeah. So, right now, I mean, yeah, we're not breaking any news here. I mean, those are your two guys. Maybe Pauly gets in there if he's still on the roster, when Manny's playing third base. But unless you're going to sign somebody, the answers seem pretty clear.
Graham is so young, and, obviously that home run notwithstanding, he's looked a little bit overmatched. He doesn't get the label of 4A player right now. Not even close. He hasn't had near enough ABs. Brett Sullivan and you got 5 hits a day for about 3 weeks, and he came up. He looked overmatched. It's a different league. It's a different league entirely. I'm going to stop lobbying for Graham Pauly in the lineup because he hasn't looked ready, and that's got to be the hardest part of being a general manager and a manager. Look at Jackson Holliday, what he's going through. Kid's never struggled at any level his entire life. Batted 700 as a senior in high school, which was just a couple years ago. And comes up to the big leagues and is getting just his lunch eaten every single day. And I feel for him. I feel for him. But he's learning from it. He's going to be fine. Graham Pauly, I think, is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. He's a good hitter. You need to play baseball. You need to hit. And so if you're not going to use him, send him down. As far as other bats, potentially, I love the Belt idea. I have loved the Belt idea. Are we banging our heads against the wall? Is there somebody else out there that we haven't thought about? Because I hadn't thought about Donovan Solano.
What did Fam sign for?
Three?
What was the number?
$3 million.
$3 million.
Man.
Yeah.
Telling me.
With $1.5 million in incentives.
Yeah.
Let's pause for station identification before we get to our final question.
Good job, Annie.
Very good.
All right, as we head into our home stretch of the Padres roundtable.
And as you know, I hate to interrupt, but you are now going into Woods' extra time.
That's exactly
right. That's
right.
I
have to be clear. To pee in my pants. Anytime we can wrap this up,
commercial-free takes on a whole new meaning. Here's my final question, and it involves you being GM for the day. You don't have to pick the player, although you can. You guys have been alluding to it. We didn't even get to the Padres bullpen, which has been lights out. Great. But you can always use another bullpen arm. That's finicky. We talked about the rotation. We've talked about the offense. If AJ Preller came up to you, I'm sure he does with you
all the time,
and he says, look, I can add a solid player to one more position group, okay, bullpen, offense, pitching, rotation, which position group are you picking? If you want extra credit, you can say the player, but which position group are you picking that you feel like needs a little bit of insurance or some help?
I mean, I think you can't go wrong adding another starting pitcher ever in any way, shape, or form. We've never had enough starting pitching. We always run out of starting pitching, even in our best seasons when we're in the playoffs. I would always want another starting pitcher, period, the end. As much as I love offense and everything else, I feel like the safe answer, the right answer, is the starting pitcher.
I would say offense. I think another bat. I mean, I just think I don't know that this offense consistently, the way it's constructed right now, is going to give you some super, super, super high runs per game average. They may have some big nights, but I think they're going to have to win a lot of games like they did yesterday. You know, winning it 4-2, 5-2, scoring early, having good starting pitching, good bullpen work. I think another bat would do wonders for this lineup.
I've said they've been a hitter light since, I mean, you've heard me say it since January 4th, to be honest. So I'm going to resubmit my previous answer. And my number two is a power right-handed bullpen arm that could slot in between Suarez and De Los Santos.
Yeah, I think a left-handed hitting outfielder or DH. I don't think this team, with this lineup for another 5.5 months, is going to have enough offense to get where they want to go. I think they have enough pitching. I think they have enough in the bullpen as long as everybody stays healthy. I don't think they have enough offense over 6.5 months to get where they want to go. I think they need one more.
It's one of those weird, there's no wrong answers, because you feel like there's all, and I think every baseball team in the country would have take one or all of those right now. Every single one would say, yeah, we probably need this, this, and this. You know,
but we've got prospects we can trade.
That's true.
And nobody answered my question from earlier, by the way. Who did we trade to the White Sox?
Iriarte.
Yeah, Jairo Iriarte, Thor. Drew Thorpe.
Thank you.
Sebi Zavala.
Sammy Zavala.
Yeah. Yeah, I remembered, honestly, the only one I remembered was Thorpe and Steven Wilson. The other two I totally couldn't remember at all.
Last game today in Colorado, and then three against the Phillies, three against the Reds. How important do you think this next stretch is?
They're all massive. I feel like the National League is such a – everyone's playing really well other than a couple of teams. The Miami Marlins are not playing well, but, man, it just seems like every team we run, I'm like, man, these guys are really good, and they can really mash, and they got good starting pitching. So it's a gauntlet right now. That's why this win today that they need to get is a big one. Come home, happy flight. Going to be a tough series against the Phillies. I'm looking forward to seeing maybe a potential Robert Suarez and Bryce Harper rematch at some point this weekend. And let's come out on top of that one.
Hey, get this win today. There's three more games at home against the Rockies in a couple weeks. Get those games.
Yep.
And I'll take 500 the rest of the way to the Memorial.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, my second hot topic thing that we'll run through here, and you guys have all probably talked about it on your shows, the fans and Cameron Maybin, old friend Cameron Maybin, who got on the lovely Twitter and said, you know what? There is a difference between San Diego and New York. I played in both places. New York fans hold their players more accountable. They're meaner. San Diego fans, they're a little bit too nice. Now, Cameron Maybin, for perspective, never played in a packed Petco Park night after night. He played in front of 10,000 people on a Monday night. The team was usually out of it by the All-Star break. It was not a team with playoff expectations. But Sam grew up in New York, and I'm curious, the bones of his argument, hey, New York is different. They're just, you're held to a different standard versus being supportive of your team. Yeah. What do you think is at the core there?
Look, I think New York is different than San Diego in a variety of ways. Look, I think the media is different. Number one, there's more of it. I think the media, and this is not to say that we're quote unquote soft here, but can be harsher for sure on the whole, right? Just the intensity of it. It's a bigger place. There's way more. I mean, go check out when the Mets and Yankees are in town. There is a difference, right, in just the amount of media and the scrutiny of it and the intensity of it. So maybe from the media perspective, I understand it. You know, look, I don't agree on the fan base part of it really at all, okay? Are the fans here necessarily as vocal in a negative way as they are in New York? Do you hear as much booing, or are they as quick to get on their guys? No, I think you could argue, and again, this is just my two-plus seasons here, this fan base, it takes more to get to that point for a Padres fan. But as far as the expectations, like when I read something, you know, basically implying that, you know, Soto wasn't held to the same standard here as he is in New York, I disagree with that. The place was packed every night last year. This fan base and that crowd had World Series expectations, and I thought held the team to those expectations. We did hear boos last year. Yeah. Okay, were they as quick to boo? Maybe not. Maybe it's different in that sense. But I disagree that, you know, that there is this massive gap in the standard that a Yankees fan has versus what a Padres fan has. Are there differences? Sure, but I thought last year the standard was set pretty high. The Padres didn't meet them.
Fans were pissed.
Yeah, they were. I mean,
pissed.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I think the standard is equally as high here. I think maybe the rush to vocally express it doesn't come as quick, but I disagreed with that.
I get the sense in New York too. Sometimes if you just say it loud enough, that's fine with the fans. If you just scream, he needs to do this and he needs to do that, and you hear it, you see. Now you talk about eyeballs. You see these tweets, sent out all the time. Of, oh man, listen to him go off on Aaron Judge, or yep, go off on Juan Soto or whatever. Just because you say it loudly doesn't mean it's true. I find that a lot of those sports talking ads, like, look, Mad Dog has made a really nice name for himself. Makes a lot more money than we all do combined. He doesn't know baseball in 2024. He doesn't. Watch his show. Listen to his show. He doesn't know baseball like maybe he did in 1984. Right. It's different. Sal Licata, we played his audio. He's one of our colleagues from, I think, The Fan in New York.
WFA.
Yeah, I listened to him screaming at Juan Soto, four pitches out of the zone. No, he's got a swing there. No, he doesn't. He got on base for Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is behind him. Like, he did his job there. He's not going to swing at a ball. So
swing the bat, bro.
That's it. Swing the bat. Swing. You got to swing the bat. And it's like, he's not going to swing at a ball out of the zone. Why would you want him to do that? And so sometimes it just comes off as uneducated. We can't. Not everything in baseball belongs in buckets. You know, New York is this. It's so nuanced. It's so different.
Great point.
And we try to put everything in buckets. We try to put our players in buckets, and we try to put our fans in buckets. Man, I know some really smart Padres fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some smart Yankee fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some smart Red Sox fans. I know some really dumb ones. I know some really nice Dodger fans. I know some really mean ones. You know, it's you can't bucket everything in this game. You can't do that in baseball.
Short and simple, the Padres fans are filling their ballpark to the highest capacity by percentage of any team, including New York Yankees, including New York Mets. And point two, in 2023, this team failed to meet the pressure of the situation.
Correct.
Which was 3.5 million fans or 3+ million fans in the stands, looking up on a Tuesday and seeing 39,000 people in the house and going, uh-oh, we're losing 2-0 to Cincinnati, you know, or whatever.
Again.
Right. Again, right. You know, the Pittsburgh minor leaguers shutting us out.
Yep.
Again, and those guys caved under that pressure,
sure.
And they performed when the pressure went off, when the fans stopped coming for the last two homestands because they knew the season was over.
Right.
So don't give me that pressure is so much better and it makes you so much better in New York, but here in San Diego, it's just Charmin soft. Give me a break. We proved it last year.
Why don't the Jets win? Ever.
Right.
They're in New York.
They're held up to a higher standard.
Ever. Why don't the Giants win?
How about the Knicks?
Ever. The Knicks are finally making a run.
I would just like Cameron
the Mets for the most part.
I would just
too.
Like Cameron Maben to come to San Diego and be introduced before a game at Petco Park. And let's play his comments so that everybody's aware of them.
I think it's,
and we'll find out whether or not we hold our people to a higher standard.
I think it was just ignorance, don't you?
He
loves San Diego.
He's not a bad dude.
I don't think he meant whatever
right.
he meant by
harm.
It, it didn't come off. But
right.
I took it personally.
Right. Oh, I took
as
it personally.
It's a little bit of a badge of honor. Like, you have to be a fan in New York to be legit.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's just,
yeah,
I don't think that's
true.
Accurate.
It's not true.
We can boo just as loudly as everybody. And we hated when Juan Soto walked all the time just as much as the guy in New York's hating it right now.
I think, Craig, I think you made a good point in the
what about mine, Sam?
Well,
not really.
And yours, no, yours.
He's so
average.
That was good.
I thought, you know, you describing the 40 something thousand people being it there every night is a good point, because I think in New York, whether there are 35,000 or 18,000 people at the ballpark, the pressure I think can come off a little bit more vocal. Right, in the sense of it comes off as booze. It comes off as like go watch the Mets first five games of the year,
yeah,
okay, when they
brutal.
Were 0-5,
yeah.
Okay?
Brutal.
And there was nobody there, but guess what? They were getting booed. Here, maybe it's a little bit less you hear it, but man, with the way people show up, it creates that same kind of pressure. And last year, you're right. It was a lot of, hey, there are 40-something thousand people here, but they're sitting on their hands because there's not much to cheer about, and this is going south.
It's an auto in New York, Boston, Philly. It's an auto response. You struck out, you're a bum. No, the guy's a bum. And then you go, you get four hits out of seven events. Oh, I love this guy. It's just bipolar. Like, it's just weird. Like, it's a weird way to fan and live. It is. It's just weird. I look at this team like I look at my kids sometimes, where I'm like, I love you so much. I would do anything for you. You're making me insane. You're literally making me insane. And so it doesn't mean I don't love you. But I'm not going to be like, you're a bum. You know, you're
right.
A bomb to
help.
My kids. It doesn't help. It doesn't do anything.
You're so right with the automatic
it's
response.
It's an auto response.
Hey, I was the kid sitting in the upper deck of Shea Stadium. You know, I'm like a sophomore in high school. I would be yelling.
Yeah, throwing sunflower seeds.
Yelling at Rico Bronya.
No, that's a little bit
before of course.
It was more like... Who is I yelling at? Like Jason Bay.
Jason Bay.
But we yelled at him too in San Diego.
But then you see him maybe walking on the street. You're like, hey.
Yeah. So you're right. It's like an auto response, and I've been involved in it too. But it's not my finest moments.
All right, we're making our way through the Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. I appreciate you guys taking part in those hot topics. Let's get back to the Padres for a second over here.
Oh, bumps. They're all bumps. Every one of them. You're all bumps.
You walk less.
Maybe what you need to do is give a lesson in fanning.
They called me.
That's a joke.
No, but just for one last reference, the Brooklyn Dodgers nickname was
the Bums.
The Bums.
The Bums.
That's it.
The Bums. I had the whole
franchise.
I had a Mets fan friend text me, who I guess is watching, text me and say, "I boo before I sit down."
That's right. It's a prerequisite.
Philly's the same way, man, and they take pride in it, and that's fine. It's their shit. I'm not telling you. I'm not telling. I said shtick.
I just got I nervous
shtick.
Here
I
for
said
a second.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I'm sure you did.
It the condition to be that way. It's just a weird way to live for me. It's just a weird way to live. Automatically pissed off before the game starts.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely been guilty of it myself too. And hey, I've been known to scream at the TV, you know, and call names and stuff. But never really at the game. Yeah, I just. It doesn't really help.
All right, I have two questions left, and we're gonna keep an eye on the clock here. Get through this next one in the next 7-8 minutes. Manny Machado, we are giving him his best. He and Yaine, as they receive their first child into the world here, either already have or shortly will be doing that. So we wish them the best. Manny Machado, not in Colorado this week. When he comes back from his arm injury and he's able to play third base, when he's able to get out there defensively, we've heard he's not going to be out there every day. It's going to be Manny maybe playing third base one day, DH in the next day, 2 days at third, coming back. Maybe having a DH day. There's an interesting bench happening here with the Padres. There's Donovan Solano mysteriously somewhere in this system.
Somewhere, right? Yes, in the ether.
What should the Padres do with that DH spot once Manny is back to playing third base?
Boy, first of all, I just want to say I'm excited and really looking forward to when he plays third base, because that's too. Something I miss at the ballpark.
So much.
It's just watching any ground ball in his area. Because that is about as much fun as I have watching Padres baseball. Yep. And we talked about their fielding issues earlier in the program. He's a pretty good third baseman who ought to make things a little better overall.
Yep.
So let's just say that. I don't have a good answer for DH right now. I mean, I really don't. I mean, right now it's a platoon of Tyler Wade and Eggie Rosario. I don't see anything different unless something changes. Unless they really believe, what's Donovan Solano, 36 years old?
He's 36 years old.
You know, numbers I mean, he was
Donnie Barrels, baby.
Well, look, he won the Silver Slugger in the COVID season of 2020.
Yep.
But I mean, since then he hasn't really hit much. I'm not ready to give him everyday DH, so I would honestly just at this point, until something changes, go Wade and Eggie.
Craig?
I would sign Brandon Belt.
Yes, I know. I was leaving that for you.
I mean, the price has gone down. It is the end of April. The man is unemployed.
Wants to play.
It's not going to be an $8 million contract. All of these deals are like $3 million with incentives, and I disagree slightly on Solano. I mean, he's hit 280 or better every year.
Okay.
Like last year, he had a 381 on base against righties. So I've got some excitement about, but like if you just tell me, well, Donovan Solano's our everyday DH the rest of the year, how much better would this team be? How much would it be a little more consistent with one more dangerous left-handed bat? We want a little more pop.
A little more pop.
On the lineup. Wouldn't it be a little more pop? And Brandon Belt isn't Gary Sanchez. He's not going to hit 170 with homers or Grisham. Him. He hits a little bit. He commands the zone. So,
sign Brandon Belt.
Do you have any reservation about? I know you want to sign him, but is there any part of you that wants to hang on to whatever money they have left over in case they need it at the trade deadline? And they've come up with another hole somewhere that'll need to be filled.
I
I do, but my counter is I think the price is now below the spot where Brandon Belt handicaps you. Yeah, I mean, just looking at every other signing that's happened in baseball right now, he's out there. He's withering on a vine. Like, he needs to play. So, like, even now, if you signed him, it would be 3 weeks before you saw him, just like Donovan Solano. So that's why I'd say get him in. Get him into AAA. Get him to the Arizona complex. You know, get him going. And then, my gosh, this summer we could really be 1-9.
Sam is the DH answer on this team.
I mean, look, he knows all these guys
really
well.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
we're all going to have the same answer here. I mean, unless you go make a move, I mean, it's Rosario and Wade, right? I mean, look, I guess if it would be a way to give Graham Paul consistent at-bats every day. I think that's an unfair ask of him to be a DH, and that's the way you're going to get him his playing time.
But that's another question. What's happening with Graham Pauly, and is he better off up here at the major league level not playing every day versus being in the minors,
you know,
and playing every day?
It's interesting because I really thought coming out of spring, in the case of Pauly, because it looked like Merrill for a while was going to be the center fielder, in the case of Pauly, that if he was here, he would play almost every day and get those consistent at-bats. I felt like that's what we continued to hear, really, you know, from Mike Schilt as he was asked about it during spring training. Hasn't been that way. And, you know, I think Graham's been put in a pretty tough spot so far. Makes the team out of spring training. He's not playing regularly at all. This is somebody who, like Jackson, who's done a great job, who has very limited experience at the upper levels of the minor leagues. So I think for him, if he is not some way, somehow, going to get those at-bats in the major leagues, he's got to be at a place where he can get ABs regularly. And that's nothing against him. Yeah. That's nothing against him. I think the Padres believe he's going to be a big part of their future one way or the other. But he needs at bats. So, look, unless you're going to do that for the DH spot, look, Rosario and Wade have both been productive at times. Yeah. So, right now, I mean, we're not breaking any news here. I mean, those are your two guys. Maybe Pauly gets in there if he's still on the roster, you know, when Manny's playing third base. But unless you're going to sign somebody, the answers seem pretty clear.
Graham is so young, and, you know, obviously that home run notwithstanding, he's looked a little bit overmatched. He doesn't get the label of 4A player right now. Not even close. He hasn't had near enough ABs. Brett Sullivan, and you got 5 hits a day for about 3 weeks, and he came up, he looked overmatched. It's a different league. It's a different league entirely. I'm going to stop lobbying for Graham Pauly in the lineup because he hasn't looked ready, and that's got to be the hardest part of being a general manager and a manager. Look at Jackson Holliday, what he's going through. Kid's never struggled at any level his entire life. Batted 700 as a senior in high school, which was just a couple years ago. And comes up to the big leagues and is getting just his lunch eaten every single day. And I feel for him. I feel for him. But he's learning from it. He's going to be fine. Graham Pauly, I think, is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. He's a good hitter. You need to play baseball. You need to hit. And so if you're not going to use him, send him down. You know, as far as other bats, potentially, I love the Belt idea. I have loved the Belt idea. Are we banging our heads against the wall? Is there somebody else out there that we haven't thought about? Because I hadn't thought about Donovan Solano.
What did FAM sign for?
Three?
What was the number?
$3 million.
$3 million.
Man.
Yeah.
Telling me.
With $1.5 million in incentives.
Yeah.
Let's pause for station identification before we get to our final question.
Oh, good job, Annie.
Very good.
All right, as we head into our home stretch of the Padres roundtable.
And
round
as
table,
you know, I hate to interrupt, but you are now going into Woods' extra time.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
That's right.
I'm about clear. To pee in my pants. Anytime we can wrap this up,
commercial free takes on a whole new meaning. Here's my final question, and it involves you being GM for the day. You don't have to pick the player, although you can. You guys have been alluding to it. We didn't even get to the Padres bullpen, which has been lights out. Great. But you can always use another bullpen arm. That's finicky. We talked about the rotation. We've talked about the offense. If A.J. Prowler came up to you, I'm sure he does with you
all the time.
And he says, look, I can add a solid player to one more position group. Okay? Bullpen, offense, pitching, rotation. Which position group are you picking? If you want extra credit, you can say the player, but which position group are you picking that you feel like needs a little bit of insurance or some help?
I mean, I think you can't go wrong adding another starting pitcher ever in any way, shape, or form. I will never have
We've never had enough starting pitching. We always run out of starting pitching, even in our best seasons when we're in the playoffs. I would always want another starting pitcher, period, the end. As much as I love offense and everything else, I feel like the safe answer, the right answer, is the starting pitcher.
I would say offense. I think another bat. I mean, I just think I don't know that this offense consistently, the way it's constructed right now, is going to give you some super, super, super high runs per game average. They may have some big nights, but I think they're going to have to win a lot of games like they did yesterday. You know, winning it 4-2, 5-2, scoring early, yeah, having good starting pitching, good bullpen work. I think another bat would do wonders for this lineup.
So I've said they've been a hitter light since, I mean, you've heard me say it since January 4th, to be honest. So I'm going to resubmit my previous answer. And my number two is a power right-handed bullpen arm that could slot in between Suarez and De Los Santos.
Yeah, I think a left-handed hitting outfielder or DH. I don't think this team, with this lineup for another 5.5 months, is going to have enough offense to get where they want to go. I think they have enough pitching. I think they have enough in the bullpen as long as everybody stays healthy. I don't think they have enough offense over 6.5 months to get where they want to go. I think they need one more.
It's one of those weird, there's no wrong answers, because right, you feel like there's all, and I think every baseball team in the country would have take one or all of those right now. Every single one would say, yeah, we probably need this, this, and this. You know,
but we've got prospects we can trade.
That's true.
And nobody answered my question from earlier, by the way. Who did we trade to the White Sox?
Iriarte.
Yeah, Jairo Iriarte, Drew Thorpe.
Thank you.
Sebby Zavala.
Sammy Zavala.
Yeah, I remembered, honestly, the only one I remembered was Thorpe.
Was Thorpe.
And Steven Wilson. The other two, I totally couldn't remember at all.
Last game today in Colorado, and then three against the Phillies, three against the Reds. How important do you think this next stretch is?
They're all massive. I feel like the National League is such a... Everyone's playing really well other than a couple of teams. The Miami Marlins are not playing well, but, man, it just seems like every team we run, I'm like, man, these guys are really good, and they can really mash, and they got good starting pitching. So it's a gauntlet right now. That's why this win today that they need to get is a big one. Come home, happy flight. Going to be a tough series against the Phillies. I'm looking forward to seeing maybe a potential Robert Suarez and Bryce Harper rematch at some point this weekend. And let's come out on top of that one.
Hey, get this win today. There's three more games at home against the Rockies in a couple weeks. Get those games.
Yep.
And I'll take 500 the rest of the way to the Memorial Day.
Yep.
You looking forward to the Phillies? Reds?
I love to see a lot of red. We're going to be seeing red for the next six days. But today is, what do you call them on your show?
Much win.
Much win.
A much win. I like that because it's not a must win, although people think today is that. And if they lose, my goodness, and only go 2-2 against the Rockies, season's over.
World's over.
It's not over if they come right back and sweep the Phillies.
Right.
So Sammy, I think it's a much win.
10
I like
seconds,
that.
Final thoughts.
Agreed. Very important game today. If they don't win it, not the end of the world, but you'd like a win and a series win in Colorado.
All right. Well, we appreciate everyone joining us for the Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Thank you for being with us. We're always grateful for you. For Chris Ello, Craig Elston, Sammy Leavitt, and Stephen Woods, I'm Annie Heilbrun. We'll see you next time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.